Last week for that, huh?
Sorry. Remind me, I have a question for
you. Okay. At my house because I live on the Red Lake River, so I thought I'd put that up again today because looking at the forecast here on Tuesday, it should have crested, right? So we'll see how this cold weather we're going to get impacts that, but it's probably this odd of water's in there. and just accumulating in the river now. So, but so they got 37 feet. So it arrives almost about 10 feet from today. So bring you a picture or something. So the first thing I will start with is, maybe I keep showing you that. Got my mouse nice and pointed nice and big now. Yeah, so you can see it where I pointed. One of the defaults always in Windows and all these computers, they seem to make everything too small. Maybe that, or I'm just can't see anything. So I can make my text big. So I decided that we should have our next exam next Thursday. So we'll go over a study guide on Tuesday. That'd be similar to our last exam. And in preparation for that, I created assignment number 7, which are my questions again. So we've had, since your last question assignment, we've had 5 presentations, including today. So the assignment is to go over the 5 presentations and create 2 multiple choice answers for each one. So instead of 5 questions, you get 10 questions. And then you need to have 4 multiple choice answers on there. Yes.
I have a question about the study guide. Do you know when that's going to be out so we can start looking at it? Are you planning on making it available for us to see on Tuesday, or are we going to look at it beforehand?
Well, as soon as I get it done,
okay.
I promise it'll be on Tuesday. But basically, what you should do is you should do this assignment if you want to start studying. Because I really believe the best way to study is to make up questions and see if you can answer them. So before Tuesday, you can do this assignment. Review the questions you made up from the previous assignment. See if you can still answer your questions. And it's going to be comprehensive in the fact that you should go back and review the previous exam, which means I should make sure I open it up. I'm not sure that I have it open for you guys to see all the questions and answers from the last one, but I'll do that. That would be good if you can do all that. But the study guide is just basically to, I'll go through and emphasize the lectures. It'd be mostly on the stuff towards the end of the last one with the aerosols and stuff like we had on the assignment. It won't be much on the history and stuff. So, but the aerosol precipitation, ice nuclei stuff, them couple lectures. So, and I'll try to get it out there, but I tend to do classwork on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and other stuff on the other days. So unless I get to it tonight, but that's what I would do is try to do this assignment. That's why I'm giving you the assignment, is I'm hoping that this will, you will actually do it. In preparation for the test, as opposed to me just saying to do it. We'll look at it, make sure you get some points for doing it. And it's due next Thursday, so same day as the test, but I would suggest doing it before the test, not after, so that you get it done. And it's on the Blackboard site. You can see the instructions there. It's the document of it. So you can go to Blackboard or the website, download the Word document, and then I have the five presentations, and then a question on each one, two questions on each one, and no multiple choice. And I'm specifically saying provide four answers. So that's kind of eliminates the multiple choice. Eliminates the true and false and makes it a multiple choice. So a little bit harder to do that. I think people did pretty well on the other one from what I was looking at. Any questions about exam assignment? And then there's the assignment that's due today, which is the try to take their MetEd test and turn your email in from taking that test. And I think I indicated the better you do on a test, you get a few more points maybe. So try that. Okay. So today I hope to talk about two presentations. We'll maybe take a little break between them and continue. The exam will be on the fog mitigation, the fog stuff. But we'll talk about the North Dakota crowd modification project known as NDCMP. So start from the first slide here. So I got a couple overviews. This is a conceptual model. So this is the conceptual model that the North Dakota crowd seeding or North Dakota crowd modification project uses. And I gave a diagram here of the two districts where they operate, and also the circles for the two radars that cover Western North Dakota, the Stanley radar and the Bowman radar. And then I have a picture here of the radar images from actually this morning when I was putting this lecture together. So this is what you can go. They run the Stanley radar year round. So you can always go and get the radar data. And this happens to be composite refractivity values with a scale given in kind of the small letters on the left there. So give you something to look at as we talk about the conceptual model. Now I try to go slowly through some of these things because it's kind of hard to get the idea, but you should get a model, visual kind of representation of how you think about what's happening when you do the crowd seeding and what they think is the process happening in the storms. So conceptual models are nice because it lays out there what you think is gonna happen, and then you can see how things evolve and if it conforms to the model or not. So rain increase. The intent is to gratiate portions of the crowd, so it's not the whole crowd, Initiate ice development minutes earlier than would naturally have been the case. So we kind of specify that we're not taking hours and hours here. It's just a minute, 5, 10, you know, it's on the order of minutes, not hours that the precip could occur earlier. Accelerate the hydrometeor growth sufficiently to allow the crowds to produce precipitation size hydrometeors during their short lifetime. So these crowds, they don't live that long. So you want to get and accelerate the growth. You know, it's kind of like accelerating the your income by getting a degree or something. You want to get these particles to grow faster. If you do this, you can add buoyancy, which may stimulate updrafts and prolong the lifetime of crowds as well. And that's what we call the dynamic effects. And that's probably where, like I said, hydroscopic seeding and some of the seeding does have a dynamic effect for precipitation. So, of course, the North Dakota project is really interested in hail mitigation, not just precipitation increases. So the in the region, the natural hail process has a main updraft of a mature thunderstorm, which is responsible for a large fraction of the storm's total mass flux. So remember, there's a lot of mass of water going in through the storm. And that's where you have the large hydrometeors. So the main mature type of the storm has most of the mass, okay? The hailstorms or the main primary hailstorm updrafts are usually tilted. So that means they're not just straight vertical. And they can possess speeds of 30 to 40 meters per second. So I got some of the important points here in bold for you. You know, think of them numbers because we're looking at the vertical speeds on Tuesday, about how that can sustain different size hailstones. So it's pretty large and can make, you know, large hailstones. Uh-oh. What was that? Something beeped at me. I'm still online. I'm just checking. Huh. My computer just beeped. I don't know what that was. I'm going to continue. And I lost my slides. So we were at the 30, 40 meters per second. So that's a pretty significant updraft, right? So you wouldn't want to be flying necessary in that location with them updrafts. Oh, yeah. Fred Reamer was telling me a story. I got to go look at the article, but he was telling me a story in the 1950s. They had an airplane and the pilot, he went into one of these big updrafts. He turned off both of his engines and rose him up to the tropopause, a big, heavy aircraft. So I'll have to get the article and give you a link to that. But, you know, so these updrafts can be significant to give you that. Anybody a glider pilot? People used to grow, you know, you can do the updrafts with the thermals over the mountains and stuff for the gliders. Let me hide my screen again, my controls.
Got my mouse there now.
So part of natural hair process is the feeder crowds, which frank the mature thunderstorms. They develop in specific quantities of supercooled liquid water. So we talked about that with the droplets. They're supercooled. And most of the ice often develops on the tops of the clouds, 15 to minus 20. That's where the natural ice nuclei become active, right? So what's the temperature that AGI becomes active at?
Negative five.
But the natural ones don't start to be active until minus 15, minus 20 in that range. So that's the big difference between the seeding agents and the naturally occurring ice nuclei. So we have slow development in these natural hail storms because the natural ice phase precipitation in because of the slow development of natural ice phase precipitation in typical feeder cells, precipitation price, hydrometers usually have only very recent development at the time of merger with the main cells. So I start talking about merger here. So we have these different cells. You have the main cell and these feeder cells that develop that are newer ones, and they merge in with the main cell. So when they do this, what's the state of that cloud that's being merged? And they don't really have fast development because they got to wait to get up to this cold temperature, minus 15, minus 20. Okay, so that slows them down. And typically, one fact to remember about the feeder clouds are that they typically range free. So what does that mean? With my radar image here, you're not going to see it. So these, my radar image here, we have these blues and greens here. There's big hydrometeors because there's rain and snow where the radar's seen. So these feeder cells are where you don't see necessarily the returns, but they're on, you know, the development side of the main cell. So a lot of times radar people can see and direct you to where the main cell is, and then you got to find the feeder cells around it. So they don't see that with the radar. So you do have significant concentrations of millimeter and larger grapple aloft within these feeder cells. So these grapples, potential hail embryos. So the grapple can become hail after either being transported to or ingested in the mature updraft, or remain within the feeder updraft as it matures and becomes dominant. So what happens there? You got this main cell. You know, does the feeder cell kind of overtake it and become the main one, or does it merge and you get kind of a new one? So with this natural development, the hydrometeors, you know, produce these hailstones that are large, so large that there's no chance or any chance of them melting completely before they fall. So they
they reach the ground and cause damage. So you have damage in hail that reaches the ground in these natural storms. So think about this now. There's a progression of the natural system here of the mature cells with these feeder cells. So let's see if I can get an illustration, kind of a cartoon. And my overrays didn't fall on a, right on where it was supposed to, but I try to hide and give you whatever better view of what the threat area is of the storm, which is the red over here. Okay, so this is a north-south two-dimensional view. So up is north, and to your right is typically to the east. So it's a normal map, but this is a plane view, something you would see looking down on the storm. So this is the area of greatest threat. And then you have lots of precipitation in the main cell. What you want to see, you know, got points A and B here to see the difference with this kind of cross-section view. And then we have labeled the different cells. We just start with the first cell that develops, call that cell one. And then the second cell is two, three. So the cell numbers go in order of time. And you can see the differences with the older cells kind of decay. So think of it in terms of lifetime, right? The first cell, it develops first, but it dies out first. And then you have the, in this case, the main cell three is your big updraft area. And that's where you have the high updrafts and potential for the hail. But it's these cells, four and especially five, that are the feeder cells that get targeted for the seeding to affect the super cooled water. So questions. So I think what's the main, so the main idea here is that to get the hail, you suppress the formation of the ice because we don't have what? Well, why is it kind of, you know, we don't get ice right away in the development of these storms, even though it's cold. So why don't we get the ice?
Lack of active ice
nuclei, right? So because of that, the storm has to wait to get the ice until it gets cold enough and more mature. And because of that, we get these hail embryos and stuff that develop high up in the clouds. And that's where the updrafts can keep them buoyant, get water wicked water, and create a lot of big hail. Okay, so questions.
What would you define the hydrogen? Is that like in the
hailstone or like the oh, yeah. Yeah, that's great. It's nice. I just start talking, right? Big rate of MERN. So does anybody from what I've been talking about tell us what do you think I mean by hydrometeors?
Any kind of water-based thing that falls through?
Water-based thing. Okay, someone else got something that would describe the thing a little bit more? What's the water thing?
The droplet.
So it could be a droplet. What else could it be? It could be hail. What else could it be?
Was it in general?
Yeah, but precip, but what types of precip? What are the terms?
Well, actually, I was going to say, did you say there was possibly grapple?
Yeah, there's grapple. So grapple is a special type of ice. So grapple could be a hydrometeor.
Could be frozen precip?
Yeah, frozen peat shake bridges, gravel, snow, ice crystals. So the hydromedia is a term that encompasses all this. So we don't say, when I want to talk about water, liquid water, I'll say liquid water or liquid clouds. And if I specifically mean ice particles or ice containing clouds, we talk about that. So hydromedia is one that I can use to determine both, that cover both water and ice. So it covers liquid droplets, it covers ice crystals, ice aggregates, snow, hail. So anything that's a solid or liquid particle of water. Okay. So good point. To do this, just listen to us talk and kind of get it, but other questions or stuff that I'm talking about that we didn't define. Okay, here's another depiction of kind of a multi-cell. So we caught these cells of different individual updrafts areas. And this is a multi-cell storm cluster. And we kind of say it's isolated. It's a nice by itself type of system. Okay. And then the black areas show the updraft and downdraft regions. The color contours are kind of showing you heavier precip in the yellow versus the green and the blue. The white is kind of the clouds that don't have precip. And of course, this is a cross section. So it's vertical. So basically from the ground up to the tropopause, to the very tops of the cloud, and then it's horizontal extent. It's kind of like west on the left to the east side for North Dakota. And let me see, we got a nice little video here that we can take a look at, see if I can get this to play and not be too loud, be loud enough. I need to make it lower. Let's see if I can control my volume here. Well, that's the speaker.
Suggest this kind of huge clouds. As subgas accelerate, low level air converges in from miles around the updraft. Eventually, as the cloud grows very tall and cold, the top of the cloud becomes glaciated and a cumulonimbus cloud is formed. The glaciated top of the cumulonimbus cloud is a sign of the storm about to reach the mature stage, which formally begins when precipitation reaches the ground. In the mature stage, the storm cloud contains both prominent updrafts and downdrafts. When the downdraft splashes down from the ground, it spreads out laterally, much like water from the kitchen faucet in a sink of water. The gathering area of rain cool air spreading out along the ground is called the cone, and its leading edge is called a gust front or outflow mountain. If you've never felt the rush of cooler air and gusty winds before a shallow thunderstorm, you notice the passage of the gust front. The mature stage is really the most intense part of the storm. Updrafts attain the fastest speeds, lightning is most frequent, rain is heaviest, radar reflectivity is greatest, cloud tops are highest, and the glaciated mantle that forms near the tropopause becomes most prominent. After about 10 minutes or so in the mature stage, the cell transitions to the dissipating stage, and the storm is cold, expands and cuts off the updraft access to go into more and more air. As the updraft fades, the cloud becomes dominated by the updrafts in the dissipating stage, as the storm rains itself out and dies. The birth, life, and death of a single cell thunderstorm typically takes less than 45 minutes. As a final summary, here's a two-part schematic showing the evolution of a single cell thunderstorm. The top panel shows a time sequence of a cross-section to a single cell thunderstorm, showing ideologic radar composite activities. The bottom shows the corresponding time sequences of ideologic radar radiation devices, with the observer being there on top of the single cell.
There's two videos here. This is for the single cell storm. So you got the idea of that. I'll go back and grab the one for the multi-cell, which I think I passed over.
I'm only showing you how multi-cell function
is the more important what we're talking about.
Let's assume that the realized multi-cell function is already in progress, shown here. Gene Rivera, this schematic shows the cross-section of the structure of the rainbow multi-cell cluster. Individual thunderstorm cells are numbered, and black arrows indicate updrafts and downdrafts. The gust bump is marked by these blue bounds each year. The clock measures the last time, and it's currently set to zero. At our starting point, individual single cell thunderstorms are in various stages of development. Cell one is already in dissipating stage and is dominated by downdrafts. Cell two has reached maturity, and cells three and four are at various points in the cumulative stage. After 10 minutes, the gust bump initiates new cells where there's warm, moist air becomes out of the point. As each thunderstorm matures, it replaces the adjacent dissipating storm farther downstream. For example, cell three has replaced cell two as a mature single cell. Cell three is in the mature stage, both updrafts and downdrafts. There's only downdrafts in cell two. With the restrained gust bump continuing to systematically initiate new storms, stage set for a long organized multi cell thunderstorm. After 20 minutes lapses, cell three has reached the dissipating stage and has overcome downdrafts, while cell four is approaching the mature stage, with cell five waiting in line as it starts to develop to well for restricted gust bump. There's a growing bundle of precipitation suspended aloft by the updraft with no discernible downdraft, so it's still in the cumulative stage. As long as new storms can keep initiating along the restricted gust bump, this process can continue for hours as new cells form along the gust bump and older cells dissipate. Granted, these cross sections are idealized and things in the real atmosphere don't always look so nice and tight. But the bottom line is that, in contrast to single cell convection, the gust bump associated with a multi cell thunderstorm repeatedly initiates new cells, which often happens on the storm's southwest flank.
Okay, so get all of my YouTube stuff here. So that's pretty nice video, simple, you know, concise depiction. So there's, you know, these single cell storms, but typically in North Dakota, we get these multi-cell storms, okay? So can you think already now a little bit about, the next part is about the seeding concept. How are we gonna affect these storms? So you can already see that, let me go back to my slide here, and I'll start from the first one. So you can kind of see that the cells, even like today, they form out to the west. So you can see these cells coming to your project area, right? So you have the protected area that are listed here, with the red is the a boundary, but they have a target area of where they want to protect. So you can imagine, like the series of radar images that I give here. You can watch, I have the radar images every 5 minutes. And if you just look at the radar images, you can see that they're moving from the west to the east. So they just keep yes. Online. I don't know. Anyway, turn that down. I'm sharing. So you can imagine these storms, they develop and you know where they're coming from. So the next part is the cloud seeding concept. Okay, so these are multi-cell storms that you're gonna see. Okay, and we talked a little bit about the different types on ways that you can affect the storm on Tuesday. This is a somewhat modified version of the plot we ended up with on Tuesday. But this is kind of depicts again the a summary of the conceptual model. So maybe if someone wanted to do an internship or something, we could create a nice sort of video like that based on this conceptual model, and you go through and you can have a video that would explain this. But since we don't have that recorded, you have me to try to explain this process of how we can affect the storms. And we already talked about the natural hail trajectory here with the black lines. So that's what we've been previously talking about, is this black line hail trajectory, where you have these natural hail amiels that get produced high up in the storm, but not in the main updraft, but it merges in with this main updraft. And then they get wafted up there, get in that big updraft, get a lot of super cooled water, and grow to large particles and fall as hail. Okay, and remember, this can be a narrow shaft, but it would move, right? Because the storm keeps redeveloping, so the hail will move as these storms develop, mature, and then die out. Yeah.
So looking at the trajectory of like the benefits of competition and promotion and coalescence, is keeping them out of the updraft or keeps them from like throwing a hail and then falling and rain on the ground?
Well, if you look at so like the beneficial competition one here, right? So that's this one here, right? You got beneficial competition and motion of updraft. They're kind of, they do get into this same area here of high updrafts. So they will go through that same updraft region. So it's not that they avoid that, it's that the properties of their microphysics is different when they get there. So look at where it starts here. This one starts up high. These ones start down low. Okay. So what's the reason it starts up high, the natural ones?
The colder temperature.
Yeah, that it's colder temperature. So we want to reduce that temperature so it starts earlier. The way we do that is introduce the ice nuclide active. So that gets the ice process started earlier. Okay. So you can imagine that, you know, this goes back, but you don't have the back heat, you know, for the natural ones, you don't have that grapple, you don't have them hail embryos start until higher up in the clouds. Okay, so these ones still, they all kind of go through, except for the Uri Reno. So this one here is the Uri Reno, and that's the only one that really avoids that big updraft. Okay, so all these things are kind of happening together. You know, some storms may have, you know, the dynamics and what happens, and you can have some of the seeding effect, you know, Uri Reno. So it's not one or the other. And except for, you know, promotion of coalescence, really requires that you receive a hydroscopic material that will create large droplets. The other three are producing ice. So the Reno, the Uri Reno, the lowering of the trajectory, and the beneficial competition. Okay, so they all get into that high updraft because it's, you know, we're not trying to change that energy. There's a lot of energy in that updraft. So like I said, you know, you get these 40 meters per second, you're gonna bring an airplane up. So, you know, and you can get into these and push your airplane down and it will still go up. You know, you're right. Why am I rising here? You know, these are, and so there's a lot of energy in that, and that's hard to get away from. Okay. And then we have the temperature difference here. So if you look at the temperatures, this starts about minus 20 on this temperature scale. You know, that's where you have a very effective natural ice you've got, typically in North Dakota here. Okay. So, but we want them to start down here at minus 5. So you want to seed in these developing storms so that when they merge, they'll have different microphysical characteristics. Okay. And you enhance the source region. This break, this shaded area comes down. Okay. So these are your mature and then your less mature cells updrafts that a lot of time are driven by this gust front. Okay. So let's see if we can go into detail and run through this and try to explain all the parts on it one at a time. So I call this the crowd-seeded hypothesis. Okay, this is what we hypothesize. That means that it hasn't been proven, but this is what we believe happens, is what the measurements and the observations have shown to be the likely scenario. So ice development, one would develop ice. So treatment with graciogenic nuclei. So here's another term we kind of switched here. So these are artificial ice nuclei. Of supercooled clouds, so you have to treat the, you know, you have to put the material into the supercooled clouds. They don't work when it's too warm, and it doesn't work when it's too cold, and there's no water. So if you don't have any supercooled water, this is not going to work. So typically, as they grow to the minus 10 temperature level, that's good because the ice nuclei are very active there for the seed in graciogenic nuclei. It will initiate significant ice develop minutes before it would otherwise occur. So this is earlier in the life cycle. So, and it would not occur so naturally in the cloud. So that's the first step, ice development. So with this early ice development, what's the expected result? So significant glaciation. So glaciation is turning the water to the ice. Of the treated feeder cells, so you treat the feeder cells and that's where the glaciation becomes, occurs. And if you remember, we talked previously about latent heat. When you change from liquid water to ice, you have a release of latent heat. Okay. During this process. So that is released into the atmosphere's temperature. That creates buoyancy of the feeder clouds. So we see much of the supercooled water because it's hard to convert it all. So some significant part of the supercooled water is converted to ice. So this less water, supercooled water remains in the treated clouds than untreated clouds. So this can enhance the precipitation mass within the feeder clouds. So more enhancement of the precipitation in these feeder cells because you can get these bigger particles that can start to precipitate. So it's important to note that the updrafts of these treated feeder cells still remain significantly weaker than these very mature cells with that big updraft. So you might strengthen it, but it doesn't strengthen to the velocities of these mature cells. So here we talk about hydrometeors again, but a lot of times these can be grapple or types of ice particles. And these can grow bigger and you get terminal velocities that are significant and they start to fall. So the bigger particles have higher terminal velocities. So precipitation. So this can lead to developing earlier precipitation shafts. So you get rain that starts to fall. So early rainout. So the rain-free base may develop earlier and you get that early rainout. And this avoids big updraft. The other thing, because the hydrometeors are small, they can melt. They can melt well before they reach the ground. Okay, so with this early rainout, you don't get big hailstones. You get, ice particles, and remember they melt, and that's where you get your rain shaft. So we move on now. If these feeder cells, once they merge into the main updraft or the main cell, what happens with this when this merger occurs? Well, compared to the non-treated clouds, they have less supercooled water remains in these feeder cells. Less freezing occurs within the main cell because you've had this early conversion from liquid to ice. So this releases the rate of heat earlier. It doesn't contribute to this main updraft. So you're not adding to it. Okay. So that can reduce the updraft strength. So you can't change it by a lot, but you can reduce it some when you start merging these in. Compared to a natural similar type of crowd. Although there's really not two crowds that are quite similar or cells. It's kind of like snowflakes, none are exactly the same. But in general, we have this concept of these cells maturing. A significant portion of the precipitation hydrometeors is transported into or ingested by the mature cell when this merger occurs. So you can actually, you know, we talked about updraft loading because you have this precipitation now, these bigger hydrometeors, it weighs down the mature updraft. So you can reduce this updraft loading. So this one's talking now, we start talking as we get into this big cell. Okay, you can have that early rain up that we talked about, but now what happens if they merge in there and you're high up into the cloud, you get into this big updraft. So this goes back to the beneficial competition. So hydrometeors produced by seed and continue to grow in this moisture-rich environment and compete with the naturally occurring hydrometeor. So this competition occurring. For the supercooled liquid water necessary, necessitates natural hydrometeors in a seeded crowd grow smaller than they would if you didn't seed it earlier. So you have this competition between the naturally occurring ones. So you can still have these ones that activate at the cold temperatures, but we're competing then with the ones that come from the seeded warmer temperatures. So it's a competition between these two, okay? So it's like in the natural ones, you just have these cold nucleated ice particles. That's why we call it competition, but it's beneficial for suppressing the hail. So now we talk about, I should have made this trajectory rolling, but a large portion of the precipitation ice phase hydrometeor is presented in the feeder cells at the merger continues to deplete the supercooled water within the mature updrafts as it rains out. So this lowers the trajectory of the hydrometeors. They won't get so high up into the crowd. So the precipitation shafts, where you might not have had them before, may partially restrict or block some of the inflow that fuels this mature updraft. So this is starvation. You can kind of get this reducement of the new development, but it's not like an on-off thing. These are all, you know, dependencies and reductions of the process. So the result is of the seed in is total supercooled water is diminished in the mature updraft. The mature updraft is weak and by mass loading, reduced rate of heat within release within it, and possible some fuel starvation. So you're affecting this updraft higher up in the storm, you know, because remember we got the big updrafts, they don't occur lower in the storm. Okay, so we just reduce that updraft some by this effect. And that results in an environment that's less favorable for the growth of hail. Okay, remember we need bigger updrafts so you can have this dynamic effect by reducing it, not eliminating that mature updraft. More rain. So the other result now is you get more rain. So this goes back to when you do crowd seeding for hail suppression, it naturally makes more rain, augments the precipitation. So if you remember in a paper I had with Matt Heffendorf, we looked at this additional rain from the operational program. So when you can see some additional rain, it kind of supports this conceptual model. You know, so there's a bunch of little observations that this conceptual model tries to encompass. Some areas would have precipitation that would not have received it before. And in some areas that would have received locally intense precipitation, receives less intense precipitation. Okay. So we can reduce the intensity of the precipitation. So an important note on this is that if you did see the primary updraft on mature cell, it would not have the magnitude of the effect. So it would have less of an effect or little effect on the storm and would not significantly reduce the hail. Okay, so the idea is that it was easier to see the feeder cells. The reason that you do that is not because of how difficult it is. It's actually better to be there and do the seeding there than if you could get into the main updraft. So, you know, it's not getting into the high updraft of mature cells that's most beneficial. Okay. And so we go back to the overall picture of the conceptual model that tries to put this all together between that early rainout that we talked about first, again, in the crowd started, and the other methods of, you know, trajectory rowing, beneficial competition, really affect the hail. Why did we not talk about the motion of fluorescence? Question under the exam. So in this, what did we do? We introduced ice streak drive, right? So that doesn't promote fluorescence. We need big hydrometeors, big, large CCN. So the early rainout, trajectory rolling, and beneficial competition, you can do with ice streak drive, not with but it doesn't promote a lot of fluorescence. So questions? Okay, so now I have a question for you, which was asked of me. So this reduces hail, right? What do you think if you had big heavy rain. Okay, would this reduce the very intense heavy rain?
Would it kind of spread it out more like you're talking about?
I think it would spread out that heavy rain in this type of case.
Yeah.
So I go back to the people in India that get these big heavy downpours and they want to reduce that heavy rain. So, you know, we have to look at the types of storms that are there. You know, are they single cell? Are they multi-cell, supercell? What type of storm is there that's producing the heavy rain? And then see if you see in this area, what would be the effect? And that's what I don't know about. You know, we talk about these multi-cell systems because that's what we observe a lot of times in North Dakota. And that's what they target a lot. Okay. So we have that. Other questions, print out this or keep an idea of the conceptual model, be able to explain all the different ports and stuff. Let's see, I got I could talk about fog abatement. However, I talked a lot about the conceptual model. Let me go back and see. Oh, I think we have, let's see, multi-cell. There's a couple more. We went through this multi-cell maintenance. That's the video I showed. There's a couple of links here we could talk about. Let's see if I can pick this up. This one's not too much related, but this conceptual model really starts going back to the work of the General Electric in the early 1950s and stuff. So this model is kind of encompasses a lot of different observations, a lot of different science that they kind of started back then. So they don't get the whole picture because that takes a lot of different projects and observations in different areas. But this is about Kurt Valentin's and his idea to try to break up hurricanes, which they have also tried to do. And if you go through, there's a couple of nice pictures in here. This is a famous one looking at the ice freezer. Or Vince Schaefer. And they, of course, one of them things is they discovered that ice nuclei, or Silver Island is a good ice nuclei. So using silver iodine, they talk about. So, and remember when you seed these crowds, you're not putting a whole lot of material into it. That's what they said here. You know, you just have a few pounds of silver iodine. Project Sirius. So making it rain, modifying thunderstorms. So that's what hail suppression would do, right? Modify thunderstorms. Hurricanes, they talk about, but The next one on Tuesday, we're going to talk about clearing fog. And they really did a lot of research to go through and do this. So you can read through all the different points here with the figures and, of course, all the different ice crystal shapes. People can get really good images of them now. You can tell how they always have their coats on and hairstyles are different. Looking at fawn droplets, remember the droplets, you know, they don't fall just as a spherical particle. This is the racetrack when they see the stratus cloud to make the ice in here. And then, you know, they used to write everything with typewriters, right? So on old paper. So you got that. And then there's another one. We'll talk about this one on Tuesday, but I'll give you the idea of we're going to talk about clearing fog at airports. And this is one of the things I'm trying to do research on now. So we'll put together a lot of measurements, and that's why we have our measurements at the Fargo Airport. So I just see if I can pull up my observations and show you. My cameras are still working. So let's see what the love these time lapse videos. I don't know why they don't get the ones that you can see as the clouds move in, just like the storms and the nice time map video. So this is looking west, so you can see the systems move across. And one, I'll point out one more thing I forgot to on my my slides is, if you look at the radars, watch me flip through the radar images, and you can see over time, every 5 minutes, how the storm moves, okay? And it gives us at the end, kind of a nice line along here. So behind this is the cold air, and this is the warmer air. So this front's going to pass through us, and that's why it's going to get cold. We have a cold front coming past today. So we can watch these come across our state, and that's the front that generates this precipitation. Okay, I'll quit there. You guys can start and stop sharing and go and do your assignment for today and for next Thursday.